So how are you this morning, Mark?
I'm good. Debbie, have we met before? Did we ever meet in TCM or anything? No.
I do believe we have met at TCM before.
Oh, did we meet through Carrie Beecham?
I don't remember, but I am positive that we met at TCM before. Plus,
I think we did.
also, we spoke about the Eyes of Orson Welles a number of years ago when you did that one. Because you just blew me away with what you did there. And what you've done now with My Name is Alfred Hitchcock is I'm watching this. It's fascinating. It's brilliant. It's insightful. And it reminds me of what Stephen Riley did with his documentary, Listen to Me, Marlon, where he actually had tapes that Marlon Brando made of himself over the decades. Through the
Yeah, I know that stuff.
self-hypnosis. And I always thought that first person idea, and you didn't have the luxury of actual audio tapes, but you write this incredible scripted analysis of Hitchcock's films. Alistair does the voicing that had me so convinced. Just listening to it, he's so good that you would think it is Hitchcock analyzing his own films. And the
He's
content.
brilliant. I mean, Alistair is brilliant, you know, and to do that like I mean, he's really, I worked with Jane Fonda and Tilda Swinton and, Deborah Winger and all the greats, but Alistair is right up there in terms of his brilliant creative use of voice.
Very much so. Very much so. But for people that may not know better, they're going to think that this is Hitchcock speaking. So. Oh my God. I have to say, if anybody could pull that off, it would be Hitch.
In the era of TikTok, etc. He I think I suspect that he might have liked this film, and I know his granddaughters have seen the film, and I got that sort of subtly very positive feedback. So there you go.
I'm not surprised that they like it. I've met his granddaughters. I've spoken with them before. I've interviewed them. I actually met Alma back in the 1980s, in the early 1980s. So she was tiny, but her personality was so huge. As tiny as she was, and in the days where he was at his largesse, Alma's personality was larger than Hitch's largesse, I think is the best way to describe Alma. That was
Did you read
such an honor to meet her.
Pat's book about her mom?
Yes.
Isn't that brilliant? I mean, I loved it.
I am just such a Hitch devotee. I love his films. I love his style, his structure, his design, because his story design and his visual design went hand in hand. And there are so many obvious things that you can pick up that are consistent in each of his films, little tricks and tropes that are just his. But what you do here that I am just so thrilled with is you break down these categories, these six categories of escape, desire, loneliness, solitude, time, fulfillment, and height. And you really tie everything together and analyze it frame by frame and comparing the films. And
Oh, thank you.
I haven't seen anybody do this since, I was in film school back in 1977. And in film history, my professor, Tim Lyons, who's no longer with us, he was a chaplain aficionado, but and wrote books on a book on Chaplin. But this was one of the things that I had to do for various filmmakers. We had to break down watch as many films as possible and then break them down and analyze them into the commonalities and the thematics that run within them. And you have done such an amazing job, and I was truly fascinated and mesmerized.
Nice. You know, I think as you know, so much has been said and done about Hitchcock. You know, if you're going to do something again, you have to say something a bit new and a bit different. You know, because you don't want the audience to think, okay, I've already heard that and seen that. And so I did really try to look with fresh eyes at Hitchcock.
And that's not always easy to do.
No.
Now I'm curious. What gave you the idea to approach the subject in this fashion and to break the films into these six categories, which are not average run-of-the-mill categories?
Well, exactly right. So my producer asked me to make a film about Hitchcock, and I thought, no, like, who needs another film about Hitchcock? You know, there have been so many. And then I thought, I'd done the Orson Welles film where I talked directly to Orson Welles, and I thought, what if I could imagine that Hitchcock in the era of TikTok and you know, 21st century, you know, what if we had his own voice? And I got excited because, you know, on the writing side of things, if you're standing in the shoes of the person, then it changes the way you write about something. So that was exciting for me. And then it was, I have a piece of paper here. I don't know if you're not, can you see me or
no? No, I'm just on a phone.
Okay. So I got a piece of paper, I scribbled on it, and I wrote down, I'm looking at the piece of paper now, and I wrote desire, loneliness, time, aging, and escape. And I thought, not all those themes get into the film, but I wanted to look at other aspects of Hitchcock, especially around loneliness and fulfillment, some of those themes that are less well talked about. And so then I looked at I watched all the films, all 53 of them, in order with these themes in mind. And my God, when you look at these films, if you just decide to look at the whole career of Hitchcock from the point of view of loneliness, they change remarkably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the loneliness of Janet Lee at the beginning of Psycho, but all sorts of lonelinesses. And so it was electrifying to take certain lenses to look at his career.
The way you break it down, and you give us two sides of the coin for each of these elements, and then some, such as escape. We've got so many different types of escape. And it's not just running from something, but it's also escaping to something or into something within yourself. And you really break it down and give us the very specific cinematic clips that support that, that demonstrate that. That's something that I think will really appeal to a lot of people because, as you know, people need visual aids. They have to see it to believe it. So you have crafted this so well, and God bless your editor and yourself in putting this together and assembling all of these clips to demonstrate things. But it's so beautifully executed, and escape is just one of them. And then you get desire and the multiple aspects of that, the dark side, the murderous side, the romantic side. I love the chaste arousal. I've heard that expression before from the days of the studio system. So to see it applied to Hitch, that I thought was really, I found that entertaining.
You know, my purpose is to entertain you, but in a rich way.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. I'm so touched. If you take escape, we can escape from ourselves, from, you know, our societies, from our responsibilities, but you can also escape in other ways, as I tried to show in the film, escape from the conventions of filmmaking and the form, try and do something new, you know, so I do want to, you know, make a film which which is enjoyable, and we can sort of think about Hitchcock, but maybe also think about ourselves, you know, and escape is, we all want to escape something, don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the best examples of escape in film was back during the Depression, and presidential order ordered Hollywood to make happy, upbeat films, which is how Shirley Temple became a star. She became the poster child for happiness and happy films. And that was an executive order from the President of the United States. So that was telling a whole nation that they needed to escape. So to see the way that it's broken down through the different types of escape in Hitchcock's films is just beautiful. And as you point out, while we're escaping and we are so drawn to the various types of escape, at the same time, Hitch is controlling everything from the sets to the clothes to the color usage to hairstyles. Every nuance adds an element of escape in some fashion and builds it. And he truly, truly was a puppet master, truly, at creating and crafting this. And you point this out so beautifully through the films. And of course, your sections, as you said, you know, it was important to you to do loneliness and fulfillment. They go hand in hand. And to watch the films during certain periods of Hitchcock's life, you can really see where his own life was reflected on the films he was making at the time, be it a form of loneliness or solitude, and then bringing his home life into things in terms of fulfillment. As he fulfills us, we fulfill him when we accept what he's doing.
I think that's right. You know, I think that's right. And, you know, people who don't know a lot about Hitchcock think that he was a kind of cold manipulator of emotions, but of course he was a human being, and I think some of the things that you've been just talking about, Debbie, are kind of like central, not marginal, but central to who he was as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And he had a wicked sense of humor.
He had a wicked
sense of humor. Which is something, if you look at, as you have done here and as you show us, if you look, there's a little bit of humor, even in the darkest moments or the most sinister moments. There is a little bit of a twist of the knife, shall we say. And I love how you bring that out and you incorporate that. Now, with all of these things that you analyze and you break down as you go through this study of cinematic techniques, how did you go about identifying? I want your spreadsheet for this. I got to tell you, Mark, I want your spreadsheet. This could not have been easy to break this down and glean from all 53 films.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting thing. Thank you for saying that. It isn't easy doing this stuff. It's easy to make a sort of conventional film about something like him, but in this case, once I had the themes I was interested in, I then took a notebook and watched every single film only with these themes in mind, nothing else. I wasn't interested in anything. I just rigorously focusing on those themes, and then, as I mentioned earlier, the films look different. They appear in a new light.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it, if you're certain at the beginning what you want to say, you know, and I wanted to say that Hitchcock was interested in loneliness and time and fulfillment, then it's so clear, you don't get lost. You know, it's very clear what you want to say.
Yeah. Well, something that you repeated within the film that I just loved is how he approached a kiss. And typically with Cary Grant involved, be it with Eva Marie Saint, be it with Ingrid Bergman. And I have done that analysis myself over the decades with the kiss and the camera. And I mean, the way that you showcase the differentials between them and how We've got an ECU extreme close-ups coming in on Carrie and Ingrid in Notorious, and the camera is there close. And then the camera will pull back and move around. With Eva Marie, instead of the camera moving around, Carrie is moving around. And the comparisons are so exquisitely pointed out, Mark. The detail that you observed and you bring to our attention is just crystalline. Just crystalline.
Thanks for that. Who would you most like to kiss in the Hitchcock films?
Oh, Carrie, of course.
Carrie?
Of course. Everybody wants to kiss Cary Grant. Who would you want to kiss, Mark?
I would say, I won't mention who, but I have kissed one of Hitchcock's actors. I would say Ingrid and Montgomery Clift.
I can definitely see that. I can definitely see that. And it's so funny. I have to tell you, I watched this, your film, after screening Conclave with Isabella Rossellini. And as I'm watching, as I'm watching Conclave, there are profile shots in there. You would swear that it's Ingrid standing there.
Wow, Ingrid, wow.
Just amazing. Isabella, it looks so much like her mother.
Ingrid is central. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people who say things like, is it Carrie or Jimmy Stewart who is the central actor in Hitchcock's work? And I always say, no, it's not, it's Ingrid.
Yeah, yeah. Ingrid is the centerpiece in Notorious. That's for darn sure. And that's one of my favorite Hitchcock's films, is Notorious. But how long was this process for you as you're breaking all of this down, Mark, and then you realize you've got to get, because some of these films, yes, are in the public domain, things like The Lodger, which is another one of my all-time favorite Hitchcock films, and his use of color and the red notes when he did that back in Britain. How long did this process take, and then to go find and get clearances on a lot of these films?
It was very short. I worked very quickly. So it was, I would say it was maximum 3 months.
Oh, my God. You do work fast.
I should say it took forever, but, I'm one of these, I'm lucky enough. I'm one of these really fast people. I make films quickly.
That is extremely, extremely fast. I'm curious, at what point did your editing start, working with your editor? When did that process start? Were you editing as you go? Did you wait until you had everything written out and structured and then started the editing process? I'm curious about that from a cinematic standpoint for you.
So I've worked with the same editor for a long time. He's brilliant. He's called Timo Langer. And so what I do is, some filmmakers, they just shoot loads of stuff and then they go into the edit and decide what they work out. What is the film? We're looking for the film. But I'm never like that. I always have an extremely precise blueprint. I know exactly the structure of the film before I start. And it's the same with this film. So I knew exactly what each of the themes were, the structure were, what order they came in, etc. So when we go into the edit, it's really quite quick.
Was there any concern that the films that you had chosen to discuss and to use as examples here, was there any concern you wouldn't be able to get those clips?
No, not at all, because we use fair dealing.
Okay, that works. Works in your favor, that's for sure. At what point did you bring in Donna McKevitt for the score? I love the undercurrent of the score, Mark.
Okay, isn't it? I've known Donna for years, and I was such a huge fan of hers, and I didn't think that she would actually, deign to work with me, but it turns out that she was able to work with me, and we've done, I think, at least one film before this one, and she's really brilliant. And, you know, what's interesting for me about Donna is that her music is really serious. It's usually quite spiritual music. You know, she's a viola player, and I'm not really interested in irony and the sort of slightly sort of campy side of things. I'm nothing against camp, but I'm not interested in that so much. And so when you ask for music for Donna, it's usually quite spiritual, which is exactly what this film needed.
You're absolutely correct in that assessment. Nothing flippant, nothing whimsical, and you don't want this music to be too sweeping and overpowering. You really do. You want to kind of stick with an almost Bernard Herrmann, Max Steiner kind of blend, but toned down to as if they're scoring for a Hitchcock film. That's the sense I got. What was the most challenging aspect of this film, of making this film for you, Mark? Well, I think you definitely said a lot of new things. Some of them I have heard and know about just because of years of studying Hitchcock. But the way you have put everything together here, Mark, and the analysis that you go into is so detailed. There's so much new stuff here. I'm going to have to watch this documentary at least four or five more times. At least. I'm serious. I was just beyond fascinated watching this. And if you could see my composition book, I have notes scribbled all over it about So it's like you got your notes, I've got mine all over this. And something in your section on time that I really loved that you brought out was Hitchcock liked controlling the audience like a heartbeat. And that I thought was such a brilliant assessment and such a great metaphor or analogy. Were you ever at a loss for words when writing this? Because this is all talk. This could not have been easy to come up with all of the right words.
Didn't find it very difficult, and I shouldn't pretend it was difficult. I didn't find it so, because when you're sitting in front of great art, you know, your mind flows and then you write stuff.
At what point did you have Alistair come in after you had the whole script done?
Whole script done. It was a sort of, I saw it as a sort of 2 hour radio play, and then I needed to find somebody who could really speak it. And I didn't really realize that I could find somebody as good as Alistair, but like, wow.
Yeah. Like, wow, yes, that's a perfect description. Like, wow. This is just amazing how quickly you got this done, your methodology behind it, the entire concept. Mark, this is truly, as much as I loved Eyes of Orson Welles, I love this one even more.
I think it's a better film. I think the Orson film is good, but I think this is better. I think it's deeper in some way.
Is there anything that you wanted to include that you didn't include?
No. I think some people think the film is a bit too long. I think, you know, if you're interested in Hitch, you'll go for the ride.
2 hours is not long, but people now, they're so used to snippets and, you know, 200 characters. And films used to be an average of 2 hours long. The time goes by so quickly because you were so fascinated with what we're seeing, but also hearing Alistair speak as Hitch. the voice just draws you in. You cannot look away from this. You cannot turn off your ears. This is a sensory experience. You tap into the mind, the eyes, the heart, the ears. I mean, just on every level, Mark. So no, it could have gone longer than 2 hours for my taste.
Oh, what a lovely thing to say. Thank you.
Now, what is your, if you have to pick one element of this film that speaks to you the loudest, which would it be?
I think the loneliness. I think that you think there's a lot of solitude in Hitchcock, and mm-hmm. I myself am somebody who doesn't enjoy crowds, and, I'm sort of slightly solitary. I'm a lone wolf myself, and so those films that Hitchcock made about loneliness are the ones that resonate with me particularly.
I think I have to agree with you. I like the idea of loneliness and solitude, and that's one of the things about Hitch's character that he creates. And they're introspective, they're fully functioning, they're observant, they're intelligent. Even Norman Bates has his own degree of intelligence to come up with the creativity that Norman does. He is a loner. Weird one, but he's a loner. But no, I have to agree with you, but that is an exceptional section of this film. So now what's next? What's next, Mark?
Always new things. So I'm making I've made several big histories of cinema. I made the story of film, and then I made Women Make Film, and I am doing the story of documentary film. So I've been shooting in Japan and Brazil and Bosnia around the world, trying to rethink what documentary is and challenge our assumptions about documentary.
Oh, wow. Oh, I have to... Any idea when you're going to finish that one?
Probably 2 years.
Well, I will definitely be there to see that one, let me tell you. That has to be a fascinating process for you right now, the way documentary has changed over the years. It's really gone. No more of this Walt Disney's Beaver Valley that I saw every year in elementary school. That was a documentary,
yeah.
In the early 60s, late 50s. So, I am sure this next one is going to be absolutely fascinating as well, Mark. I can't thank you enough for taking time to talk with me this morning about My Name is Alfred Hitchcock. This has been so much fun.
Pleasure.
Maybe I'll see you at TCM in April.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Mark.